makes sense.
Great morning, humans. Great morning, world. This is Dr. J.C. Dornick. Today, one of my favorite topics. We're going to make sense of what I call the program. Probably one of my favorite topics, and that is this idea of if you're not happy with your current operating system and you would be able to discern that just by the results that you're getting, are you moving forward? Are you happy with your progress? Or you kind of feel like you're trying to move forward in life in a rocking chair. Well, this is going to bring up this idea that the way you think, feel, and act, it's actually not your fault. And what I mean by that, it's your program. So as we move further into this Make Sense podcast, it's important that I continue to provide you with a base knowledge and base constructs and concepts and language that we're going to be using in later episodes. So this podcast is about you transforming into a more conscious version of yourself so that you can begin to see the previously unseen. This is a very fascinating concept to be able to see the unseen. And that is not that some sort of mystical thing. For those of you that know me, I've done a lot of work with plant medicine, and I'm very fascinated with this concept of the world within the world. But what I'm saying is just from a standpoint of consciousness, there's a lot of things going on that we miss. And the reason for that is that we're running this operating system that is not really programmed to see certain things. My intention in this episode is to expose something to your conscious mind. What makes it challenging, this thing that I want to expose to you and show you, is actually invisible to you. In fact, it often cloaks itself as you, which makes it very hard to see. It's not that it's invisible, it's just that you can't see it because it's cloaking itself as something that you think you know about. No, it's not your ego. Your ego actually works for it. So here's a quote that I'm taking right from my book, Make Sense. I woke up to realize that my perception of reality was not my own, but one I had assumed as a result of the information that I had been consuming. Love, Dragon. This is a fascinating way to open up this topic, this idea of looking at what you assume is some sort of reality. I mean, we're constantly judging good day, bad day. We're constantly making these assessments of everything that we interface with, including our day and our family, our friends and relationships and our work life and everything like that. But there's something about all of that interaction that we don't realize is we're actually interacting and consuming those things on a regular basis. And we're very, very often unaware of the fact that that is supporting this program that is jaded in many, many ways. So stop for a moment and ask yourself this question. Is your interpretation of reality, including the way that you look and respond to things, your own? So just marinate on that for a second. Is your interpretation of reality your own, or are you open and curious and ready to acknowledge the outside forces that may, it's a powerful word, may, I love maybe and may, the outside forces that may have played a role in it or forming it. So before you say no, because we're not big on that word here, although I love to say I don't know, because I used to be someone that had to know everything, can you prove that it's not possible? Can you prove that it has not been influenced and programmed by outside forces? You see, when you think that you're right about something, you forget about that. That way that you perceive, believe, and respond are manifestations of what it is that you've been taught and continue to reinforce every day with the things that we consume with regularity. Welcome to the program. The following is an excerpt from one of the chapters aptly named The Program from my book, Make Sense, Solving the Mystery of Why Shit Happens. You're just going to love this book. But one of the things that we've done in our beta test of the book is we realized that these topics, although you're going to love reading them, are really, really cool when we discuss them. So we have this private group that has beta tested the book and we discuss the chapters. You're going to get an excerpt from my book, but you're going to get it interpreted by me. But if you read the book, you'll see a lot of commonality. After a life of misfortune and suffering, French artist Paul Gauguin painted a masterpiece in his dying days while living in exile in Tahiti. I wouldn't mind living in exile in Tahiti. What about you? Viewed from right to left, if you look at this, and there's a picture of it in my book, it demonstrates the circle of life from birth to death. This powerful piece unveils the deepest mysteries of the human race and is appropriately named, Where Do We Come From? Where Are We? And Where Are We Going? That's the name of the painting. So just stop and visualize that right now for those of you that are just listening. That opens up this idea of not only answering those questions, but how have we been influenced by where we come from? And how has that interpreted or helped us interpret who we are and also this idea of where we're going? My intention, once again, is just to open your mind up to something else that might be going on. So these questions are the premise upon which we all roam this planet in search of answers and as sense-making machines. We've talked a lot about that. So when we seek the answers to unanswerable questions, we're forced to do our best to fill in the gaps and make sense of things. In other words, we make shit up. Are you ready to admit that you make some shit up? In fact, this is the birthplace of things like, and this is going to ruffle feathers, religion, psychology, theories, science, all representing man's attempt to make sense of things. That's an important concept to recognize, is that a lot of the stuff that we have created and we continue to create, we've made up to fill in the gaps of a very, very hard to define thing called reality. Whatever it is that represents your personal foundation for your reality, what's good or bad, right or wrong, just or unjust. Did you just come up with that? Well, if you just came up with it, you're pretty special, because most humans were born into this world with not having any idea about that stuff until they were actually taught. So if you think that you invented some of these concepts that you have, you're special. And I'd like to have you on my show. What's important? It's to recognize that our sense-making machines have been programmed, and that program is the backbone software that is controlling your hardware, or what I call your virtual reality suit, your five senses, controlling these tentacles that you have that are interfacing with reality and pulling stuff in. For starters, what if it's not accurate? Have you ever stopped to wonder if your operating system, your virtual reality suit that's processing and perceiving and receiving and assuming, have you ever wondered if it's accurate? Have you ever looked under the hood? Because we spend most of our time trying to enhance it and upgrade it. But have you ever looked at the constructs of it and said, are they accurate? I know you've been sold to the idea that it was. I mean, I was. But what if it's not? So here you are doing your best to make the right decisions in life. Choose the right path, as well as stay on track and follow through with your physical, mental, and financial goals. Just like everybody else. Everybody wants to be happier, healthier, and wealthier. So here we are running our program unbeknownst to it, and we're just trying to do our best. And now, for the first time, we're noticing a red check engine light that's been on yet had black tape over it for years and years and years. And that light, now illuminated, or at least now we're perceiving that it's illuminated, is suggesting that we take a look under the hood. Take a look at that engine that was built by others with their own intentions for you. Perhaps different than the ones that you are actually in need of right now, or actually for you. So it's important here to shift into a curious state of possibility thinking. As a matter of fact, I like to think that that is the perfect person for this podcast. It's one thing if you want to learn and you like these topics, but it's another if you're open and curious and open to the idea of possibilities and maybes, you know, open to the idea that you might not know everything that you know. Why is that important? Because if you can't justify a reason to rethink or reevaluate something due to the mere possibility that there may be another truth or better way, if you can't do that, the idea of making changes in your regularly scheduled program will just seem nonsensical. And you'll find yourself doing that very often in life. Say, oh God, why bother? You'll come up with some sort of a confirmation bias, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, that something is nonsense. And it's only because you're not open. So you have to get to that open and curious place, that possibility thinking place. So in order to experience growth, we must be willing to challenge this programming that we have and that we've received and become open to a potentially better way. Is that you? If that is you, you're poised for amazing growth this year. Otherwise, you'll find yourself hell-bent on protecting and justifying your position on things. And that, my friends, is the life of what we call the herd. The majority, the popular masses that are just simply okay with trying to get into town in a rocking chair. Isn't that the case for so many people that we know? But you know what? I've spent time trying to get places in a rocking chair, so I understand. And the reason why they do that is they believe that rocking chair is the right way to do it. They believe that's the vehicle and that that rocking chair is part of their core values. That's why we get stuck on things. So this, of course, gives rise to the definition of insanity. Isn't it funny how we know know what the definition of insanity is. We always say that's the definition of insanity. But when it's actually happening to us, we don't recognize that we're actually in practice of the definition of insanity. So to add some color to this, it's interesting to look at the characteristics and strategies of scientists. I'm fascinated with just the characteristics of a scientist. There's no group of humans more open and curious than scientists. Think about this. Scientists are actually in search of nothing else but the truth, and they seek facts. So the idea of a scientist coming across something that proves or even debunks their own theories, it excites them because it's the truth that they seek, and they will let nothing deter them from acquiring that, not even their own theories. So a nice role-playing exercise for you today is to play a scientist. Just be someone that checks facts and is remaining open and curious all the time to better ones. If you can sit in that space, a scientist is forging forward with their current theories, but they're always open when they hear about another one that's potentially better. Make sense? Let's talk about your operating system. Here's a great quote from one of my favorite authors and scientists, Alan Watts. We seldom realize, for example, that our most private thoughts and emotions are not actually our own. For we think in terms of languages and images which we did not invent, but which were given to us by our society. Alan Watts. I just think that quote is just perfect. And, you know, I very, very much resonate with people that have that level of consciousness. And I know a lot of you listening have that level of consciousness where you realize that a lot of the things that you perceive and believe, your thoughts and emotions, they're not yours. They were given to you by your programmers. And we're going to talk about that in a second. So if you look into a baby's eyes, you'll see that they have very little self-awareness. This is a fascinating thing. I love when if you ever hand a baby to me, and I'll absorb their cuteness and I'll be excited about that. But I love looking into a baby's eyes because they have very little self-awareness. The person one grows into is a mask worn over their consciousness. Think through that for a second. You'll be surprised to learn that this mask that we develop throughout our life is given to you from the outside in. So stop and just process that for a second. Just process the idea that you might be wearing a mask. You can call it your identity. And that mask is not only projecting what you think about yourself, but also projecting what you think about the rest of the world. We're just considering the idea that it's been given to us from an outside source. So once a human becomes awakened, which is what you and I are doing right now, their consciousness begins to penetrate and shine through that mask to see what it actually sees, not what it's been trained to see. We come into this world as biologically conditioned structures without self-image. That's that little baby. However, there's much debate over the idea that we're all born prematurely. This is because a newborn baby's brain is actually not fully developed at birth. In a perfect world, we'd further our stay in the mother's womb for 15 months. Not a great thing for the mom, I'm sure. However, the theory makes total sense, and what it really does for us, because I don't think we can change that, is it unveils our susceptibility to not only learning and absorbing from the outside in, but it reminds us that our brains can become permanently wired to accept all that we consume at this early phase as reality. And we just simply accept it and embrace it as the way things are. Think about it. If you're embracing and feeling like you understand the way things are with your current operating system, what we just did is we said, well, look how it began. And this once again opens up this idea of validating the curiosity to look under the hood. What's really cool about this is this means that if you're having a bad day right now, you might be wrong. But it also means if you think you're having a good day, you might be wrong as well. So as we grow through life, we face the challenge of increased responsibility for ourselves. Over the years that I've been around, I'm 52 now, I progressively began experiencing a series of awakenings that unveiled to me what I would call an inefficient operating system that was not moving me forward. Here's how it unfolded. I became aware that I was running a program inside that was unconsciously calling all of the shots. I would say, why did I make that mistake? Why did I put my foot in my mouth? The program decided what was good or bad and what I should or should not do. What is interesting about this program is that I was unaware that this program was running. You don't know that your program is running. Much of what your brain does, you're unaware of. I always assumed that I was voluntarily making decisions. Not the case, especially if you actually learn how the brain works. There was an automatic operating system that would activate in different ways in response to certain happenings, people, and scenarios. This is a big, wide open awakening for you. The side effects and symptoms of this programmed response system began showing up for me. For example, I'd find myself overeating and saying things that I didn't intend to say to friends and family. There was something inside of me calling all of these shots without consulting me whatsoever. Hey, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor.
The Make Sense podcast is sponsored by the Make Sense Academy, co-created by both myself, Mika, aka The Chicken, and The Dragon. The Make Sense Academy is a live interactive community where like-minded, solution-focused, curious seekers of expansion gather daily in a mastermind setting with both Chicken and Dragon, where they have access to premium content, online courses, and powerful collaboration and networking, all for $24 a month. The Make Sense Academy and its members are solely responsible for funding the Make Sense podcast. So feel free to reach out to us at www.riseupwithdragon.com and check out the Make Sense Academy, risk-free, with a money-back guarantee. Now, back to the Make Sense podcast.
This brings up a unique challenge. Once a program has been absorbed, and we just kind of unveiled the challenging aspects of how we come into life with the underdeveloped brain, but once the program has been absorbed, we have this fail-safe defense mechanism that is in place to protect it from anything otherwise. There's this fail-safe thing that's been built into your program. It's your number one highest paid employee and your right-hand man or woman, and it's called your ego. A fun analogy that I use is called the bouncer. And I talk about this quite a bit in my book and in our community. Think about the idea of a bouncer. A bouncer stands outside his nightclub with a detailed guest list, checking every ID. The nightclub represents your life, and the bouncer controls who gets in and who doesn't. That's your trained ego safeguarding and preserving your program thoughts, feelings, and concepts, labeling and judging everything that it perceives, just like a bouncer. Your bouncer works closely with your VR suit, or your five senses, your tentacles that are perceiving and receiving and interfacing with everything. And it decides who gets in to the nightclub, and it's not open to new ways of perceiving the world. I always find it interesting, and I've been through this myself, this idea of getting out of my own way and kind of blaming my ego for getting me in trouble. It was a very, very big awakening for me when I realized that my ego was something that I trained and it was working for me. As a matter of fact, it thinks that it's doing the right job because I taught it. I love this idea of the bouncer because if you play that role, then you'll realize that it's up to you who comes in and who doesn't. And it's also, you know, I actually did bounce for quite a few years when I was in my college days, and that's a whole other story. But sometimes the bouncer has to go through the club and kick some people the hell out. So in order to consider reprogramming our Intel processor and our VR suit, all fully reprogrammable, we must take control of the bouncer. This is the key, because the bouncer is part of that unconscious response system that you have. It's going to do what it's going to do, whether you tell it to or not. It's actually programmed to know that you're going to tell it not to do what it's supposed to do, and it's programmed to not listen to you. It's like this write protected switch on the side of an SD card. I'm using an SD card to record the audio for this right now. And the only reason I'm able to transfer my audio to the SD card is because it's the write protect switch is open, meaning it's not protected. Your bouncer or ego is committed and not open to new ideas. So I'm going to ask you right now to just flip that switch. So I became intensely curious to identify where I had received this inefficient operating system. Now that would prompt somebody to maybe place blame. That's not what this is about. When you're open and curious, it's not necessarily to place blame. It's just to say, well, where did I get that idea? It's an interesting question to ask yourself when you're perceiving something and you have thoughts and feelings about it. I like to just pause and just say, where did I get that idea? Did it come from what I'm seeing, or is it part of this programming that I received? Think about it. Whenever we buy a new car or technology and it malfunctions or breaks down, who gets the blame? It's always the manufacturer, right? So I was already blaming my parents for years and years and years for all of my problems, and now I know why. They played a role in programming my operating system by teaching me to adopt theirs. I can't blame them for that. They actually thought that was a good idea, and I can see myself doing that with my children and my friends and my family and people that I coach. We always do the thing that we think is best for others. They taught me the good and the bad of what they were taught. I bought into it all, as most kids do. And because of that underdeveloped brain, most of it, I didn't even know I was buying into it. And it just progressively became part of my operating system and unknowingly started to view the world through their eyes. Now, I'm not just talking about my mother and father, because there's other aspects to the programming, and we're going to get into that. But just think about this idea of viewing the world through the eyes of the people that programmed your eyes. But I knew that there was more. You know, I would notice glitches in the matrix or wrinkles in this program, just things that didn't make sense to me. I would notice every now and then that I would do something that I did not intend to do. And that got me open and curious to say, hey, there's got to be more to this. Can't just be my mom and my dad. So I couldn't blame or credit them solely for everything that I had. I wasn't consuming and absorbing information from them alone. So who else is involved in programming? So we're talking about our programmers right now. So I became like a detective, unpacking the files of my past and evaluating where I picked up my thoughts, perceptions, and concepts that controlled my mind and my VR suit, my sense-making machine. You know, one of the things that I talk about in my book is I give this different perspective of going back to a different time in your life, and I refer to it as your lifeline, but going back and evaluating it through the new upgraded lenses that you have now with a new level of consciousness. It's pretty interesting to go relive something as who you are now, and it's much easier to make sense of things and process them. There was my mother, my father. Oh, wait, what about my teachers and my preachers too? Anybody that was teaching me in those boxes that we put our kids in, and then anybody that was super passionate from a religious standpoint or theories or philosophies preaching to me as well. All people telling me what was right and what was wrong. Making these observations into my 30s, I recognized that I had spent over 20 years in a box of the education system. I was put in a box just like we put our kids. My daughter goes to school right now. I'm having lots of conversations with her outside of it, but she's in the system. A couple of my kids have done some homeschooling as well, so I've experienced it all. But I was in this box called the education system, consuming with extreme consistency and regularity the lessons shared by my teachers. We weren't religious, but I sure had preachers in my life. They were represented by those who spoke from a place of being right about things, about stuff. Preachers come from all walks of life. People that shared concepts over and over again with my vulnerable, neuroplastically open mind. Friends, family, and authority figures. I was in school, in and out of synagogues and churches throughout my whole life, and chances are you've had your own version of that. Consuming, and therefore assuming, their uploads were all valid. Think about how much time you spent in your life not disputing and not challenging things. All well-intentioned, I'm sure, but unconscious to the ramifications of what happens when I bought into their programming. When we teach somebody something, when you are part of the programming of someone else, you don't think about what's going to happen to them later on in life using your program. The very nature of my mother's, father's, teachers, and preachers was to actually nurture, guide, and protect me. Some useful and some harmful, but all well-intentioned. And it's important to recognize that so you don't go into that blame. Nobody's perfect, right? I couldn't blame all of these people, as that would just imply that they were at fault and I wasn't, and I would spend the rest of my life like that. In fact, I've learned through parenting of my own children and mentoring of others throughout my career that my goal is not to indoctrinate people into belief the way I do. Mothers, fathers, teachers, and preachers often unconsciously push their own concepts of reality onto others to simply validate themselves. Think about that. That's why I like to say that I'm not tethered to you buying into what I'm saying as reality. Because if I was, I would be doing that to validate that I'm right to myself. If I tell you something and you go, yes, that is what is, that's validating to myself. If you don't, we're probably not going to be friends, right? I mean, that's the way it goes out there. That's called conflict. So if somebody buys into what I think, it only validates what I think, not them. Makes sense? And that's why we have to not blame people for that. Traveling further into my evidence room, this is the way I like to look at it, and you can do this in your life as well, and placing all things on my evidence board, aka my crazy wall. Now, I just want to stop there for a second. This is a really fun concept. You'll notice in any of the videos that I have the Make Sense logo on the wall, and I have all of this red yarn connecting all of the words of Make Sense. So there's something that you see in a lot of videos called an evidence board that the detectives put all the different pieces of their investigation and people and events and things, and then they connect them with red yarn to try to make sense and solve the case. So another word for that is crazy wall. Looking into my evidence room and throwing things up on my crazy wall, I discovered other elements that were at play other than my mother, father, teacher, and preacher that were also responsible for my own operating system, and I want to share those with you now too. Now, typically, when you hear people from stage talk about their MFTP, that's what it stands for, your mother, father, teacher, and preacher. But I've added two letters to that, and that is S and E. So now referring to our programmers of this program that we're talking about in this episode as your MFTPSE. There's the mother, the father, the teacher, the preacher, but then there's also society and evolution. This is a new level of consciousness. So those last two, the S and the E, are what I call the silent killers because they're running and they're happening and you're unaware of how they're impacting you. Silent, meaning we are often unaware of their influence because we don't consider these things. That's why we say things like, I forgive you for you know not what you do. Remember, that which you consume with regularity programs your mind and your VR suit to assume things with regularity. So it's hard to register, but society and evolution represent other components of our programming. So we're exposed to society every day. And at the time of this podcast, we're in 2024. Social media is like all over the place, and people are spending just tons and tons of time in front of what my grandfather used to call the idiot box. That's what he called the TV. Throw in on top of society, because think about it. If it's true that what we consume ends up being what we assume, think about what you're consuming every day. That's why we say don't turn on your phone in the morning. Don't check your emails. Don't look at social media. It'd be great if you didn't look at it at all, and I have to use it to a certain extent, but you don't know what's coming in, so you're not in control of your consumption. And what you'll notice is that society is in support of very, very many of the elements that represent your program, especially if you're following the herd. Throw on top of that, the passing on and forward paying of all things that our predecessors and ancestors learned through evolution of man, dating back to the days of the caveman. Even though there's no saber-toothed tigers and T-Rexes trying to kill us right now, our stress response system has been wired to fight or flight in the face of anything that remotely resembles anything from the past. Society and evolution are massive contributors to your programming. You'll find yourself getting scared of things that are just not scary because they have elements that remind us from things that we've gotten paid forward and passed on by evolution. That's right. You've been programmed and continue to unconsciously support that program by consuming and over time assuming everything is the way you think it is. So now it's become your operating system. And that's what I mean when I say your operating system. If your operating system is calling all the shots and your operating system's been programmed from the outside in and it's potentially faulty, this is exciting news because A, it means that all bets are off. We have the opportunity to completely reprogram things to better suit our needs. So what's interesting to note is that you've constructed a customized surrounding and strategic perception of society that validates and supports your program. This is why it's very, very tough to shift things. I very often talk about that idea of the 120,000 ton oil tanker that's moving this way, and all of a sudden you're asking it to turn. And we've spoken about that a little bit. To top all of that off, we've created a surrounding of people and things that help support and confirm everything that we know or what we call the known, right? This is known as confirmation bias. Fascinating topic. Confirmation bias and cognitive bias. Really, really fascinating things to look at. Where we seek out and favor only the information that supports our existing beliefs. So what that means is if you believe something, you'll find yourself hanging around with others that believe it and watching the specific news channel that supports what you believe. If you turned one channel over, all you would do is be saying, these people are crazy. So you go back to your channel and say, yes, these people are not crazy. That's called confirmation bias. You're actually biased in confirming what you believe, but you never stop to think if what you believe is accurate. That's why I said before to play the role of the scientist. Even in the absence of the things that you believe being factual, you're still going to turn your head from anything and everyone that thinks otherwise, and you're going to confirm what you think by staying thing and that. So you've built a surrounding of people and things to support it. So it's very hard to change your mind. If right now you're listening to this podcast and you're open to the idea of it, recognize that when you go out and try to execute it, things have been constructed to support otherwise. So this takes practice. So this can lead to an illusion of reality that creates a challenge should you decide to change the way you look at things. So back to that famous saying, if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. Very difficult to do, as you now understand. Think about all those things in your life that you refer to as your core values and beliefs. Perhaps you even refer to them as non-negotiables. You might even be known to other people as stubborn or hard-nosed. Here's a great quote from Daniel Kahneman. The confidence people have in their beliefs is not a measure of the quality of evidence, but of the coherence of the story the mind has managed to construct. Daniel Kahneman, one of my favorite authors, his newer book that I read was called Noise, but his famous book is Thinking Fast and Slow. Just genius, this guy. I'm going to read this one again. The confirmation people have in their beliefs is not a measure of the quality of evidence, but of the coherence of the story the mind has managed to construct. Folks, stop right now and just entertain the idea that everything that you think is a story that you have managed to construct, and everything else that you have in your lifestyle is in support of it. So it's interesting to look at rock climbers. Rock climbers refer to that one hard move in their line that poses the biggest challenge as the crux. In terms of what we're talking about right now, the crux in reclaiming control of your program lies within this bias that we've developed over time to support that program. Very, very difficult, but we can totally rewire this sucker. And it takes time, but you see why I'm laying the foundation for this, because where we're going to go now is we're going to entertain topics and ideas that are way outside your comfort zone, which is where growth takes place. But now you're experiencing what we call brain awareness perception, and you're becoming more conscious of the fact that everything that you know might have been programmed from the outside in. So confirmation and cognitive bias is the simplified processing of all information through a filter that references all past experiences and preferences. We use this filter to process perceptions, make decisions, and determine our reality. So this cognitive bias can direct our focus on things that others can't see. This is fascinating, where we actually claim things that others say that is just simply not true. How is that possible? And it works both ways. Because if you tell me that I see something, or something that I see is not true, I think you're crazy. It's fascinating. Typically, due to the fact that they are not there to be seen. There are things that you perceive and see that others can't see because as far as they're concerned, they can't see it. It's not there. Outside of the realm of logic and rationale, projecting an augmented version of reality that suits our current needs, which prompts us to support that reality by focusing only on the things that confirm it. There's the confirmation bias, and it's ignoring anything and anyone that challenges it or falsifies it. So in other words, we make shit up to make our story true. You should feel liberated by recognizing that to a large degree you're full of shit. But you know what? We all are. Because at the end of the day, everything I'm telling you right now could be bullshit too. Almost makes you feel like a puppet, right? I gamify everything in my life, but to look at yourself as a puppet, meaning I've been controlled by others, and that's your programmers in this instance. So the programming that we've received thus far becomes justified and protected by our bias or our egos, the bouncer, and our opinion. You could even say that the ego or the bouncer is the master of puppets. Big Metallica fan right now. I'm taking my daughter to her first rock concert, and in my opinion, it's always got to be Metallica. Any headbangers out there. So many refer to Descartes' famous quote, I think, therefore I am. Love that. When somebody reads that quote, they go, yes, I think, therefore I am. That just makes you feel wonderful because all you got to do is think, and that is what is. But many refer to that as the fall of civilization. It began a movement that prompted people to address reality in the form of opinions and reactions based on their thoughts. In his defense, I don't think Descartes knew how much we would be thinking about how susceptible we would be to the repetitive suggestions from our programmers, our influential MFTPSEs. So when he says, I think, therefore I am, at that time, he was just acknowledging that whatever the mind perceives and believes, the mind achieves, right? But I don't think Descartes was thinking about the programming then or how much time we were going to be spending on that. So Descartes, if you've somehow managed to travel back in time and you're listening to the Make Sense with Dr. J.C. Dornick podcast, I've just uploaded some cool information. We could go get high one day and talk about it, but it's the MFTPSE concept. It's easy to become wired into these suggestions, opinions, and concepts that we consume regularly. And we know that neurons fire together, wire together. This principle is actually really cool. It's called the Hebbian learning rule. Neurons that fire together, wire together. When two neurons in the brain, so this is how the programming sets in and locks in. And it's also how we will reprogram, you know, with the advent of things like neuroplasticity. Neurons that fire together, wire together. When two neurons in the human brain are activated at the same time, they become more strongly connected to each other over time. So this process is called synaptic plasticity. That's kind of where neuroplasticity comes from and is the basis for learning and memory formation of the brain. So if you're learning something, like right now I'm learning how to play the harp, right? So I'm basically having neurons that are firing together and wiring together, and all of a sudden I'm noticing that I know how to play the harp. Same thing with learning a language. Hebb's theory also proposes that the strength of the connection between the two neurons depends on the frequency and timing of their activation. So when two neurons are activated at the same time repeatedly, the connection between them becomes stronger. So go back to that underdeveloped brain and go back to anything that you think is that you're not willing to consider is not. That is a strong connection between those neurons. This reminds us of the power of consistency as it leverages the neural connections where memories of the event are formed. And it also lets us know how to rewire it with consistency. Probably the most powerful thing, it's the construct of habit formation, consistency over time. So this created a situation where people could be led to believe one thing and be closed-minded to the possibility of another. Descartes also said something else that was cool. Since our senses cannot put us into contact with external objects themselves, but only with our mental images of such objects, we can have no absolute certainty that anything exists in the external world at all. Now, that's Descartes a long time ago talking to people like Donald Hoffman and David Chalmers and Rizwan Virk, all these people that are talking about AI, virtual reality, and the simulation hypothesis. He's saying it, but way back then. He's saying, if you look at the way our sense-making machines are formed and how they're persuaded by outside forces, there's a good chance that everything that we see can't be proven. It's just what we see, and we've been programmed to see it. Descartes postulated what he called the evil demon argument. This is a fun one. This is where he proposed that we all live with this entity, a demon, capable of deceiving us. As a result, we lose our inherent ability to process what it is that we see without doubting its difference compared to what we think. That's the ego, isn't it? I think it's interesting to think about this concept that there's an evil demon or a machine living in our heads that's calling all the shots, as if it's some sort of a separate entity implanted in our brains. That's what I thought was funny about that evil demon concept. Planted in our brains, and it controls and coordinates our perceptions and responses. I believe we all inherently feel that there is a guest in our brains, a different version, an alter ego. I actually call it the little liar. It's a fun game I play, and it's manipulating us. I call it the little liar because the voice in my head very often is lying. So the concept of the dark passenger is widely accepted. You know, we have these thoughts that cause us to cringe at the very idea of others knowing about them, the dark passenger. And as the amazing Jim Dethmer describes in his drama triangle theory, we place blame on the demon or machine. That's called shame. You blame yourself on the machine in your head as if it were placed there by others. There's this interesting story that was told, and it's called Plato's Allegory of the Cave. And it's a symbolic story of how humans learn to interpret reality based on what they see. Why am I going to such lengths to explain this right now? It's funny to just stop during this podcast and think, like, why do you keep giving examples and try to get people to really understand this? Because it's so important. It's so difficult to acknowledge that almost everything that you believe to be true could just be what you were taught to believe that's true, not necessarily what is. So here's another one. Plato's Allegory of the Cave is a story of how humans learn to interpret reality based on what they see rather than just what is. So in this story, Plato describes a scenario jail where a bunch of prisoners, if you can visualize this, in my book there's a picture of it, were constrained by chains inside of a cave. They were just held there against their will in a cave where they were forced to only look at the wall that was in front of them. And there was a nice fire to keep them warm burning behind them, which was casting and projecting shadows on the wall that they were looking at from the people that were walking by. And so all they had in their existence, in their reality, was this wall in front of them with these shadows. And it became the only thing the prisoners saw over time. So after some time, sure enough, these shadows became the interpretation and definition, the basic construct of what the world and reality was to them. So the allegory looks at our philosophical thoughts of truth and how we come to terms with it and confidently describe it. Not until the prisoners are released can they slowly begin to even entertain a new reality. The narrative actually ponders what would happen once the freed prisoners learned of a different reality outside the cave. And the postulation was that first, the assumption would be that they would return to the cave and attempt to free the others so that they too could see this vast new reality. Their following belief, the next belief, was that the prisoners still in the cave would try to kill the messenger that came back and tried to promote this other reality, as it was a threat considered blasphemy. Plato's allegory of the cave, very, very cool. You can go look that up. So humanity today is not much different from Plato's narrative. We are what we eat, and that's not just with food. S, society, in MFTPSE, reminds us of our constant daily consumption, all in support of our programming and our operating system. We're always going to consume things that seem like what we like to consume. Watch the news regularly and see how your perceptions, conversations, and reactions to everyday life begin to shift. Follow politics or the conflict in the Gaza Strip going on right now and see how that affects your perceptions and conversations with others. I spent my whole life consuming and shaping perceptions with a programmed operating system that I received and confirmed from my MFTPSE. My brain, software, and my VR suit, hardware, became hardwired to my unique way of looking at things. That's why this thing was so difficult for me to do, so tough to turn around. That's why I'm so excited about presenting this information to you. My programming, just like yours, was its manifestation. And my perceptions and my responses were actually not mine. They were not my own. And I had to come to that conclusion before I could begin postulating and opening myself up to new ones. Not from my conscious mind, but from my subconscious programmed mind is where they were coming from. I learned later that my subconscious mind, my automatic autopilot version of my mind, represented 95% of my operating system. So we program and support our subconscious mind with the repetitive consumption of data from our MFTPSE. And if you have a concept or a belief about anything, it was created, molded, and confirmed by your consumption. So there's an interesting idea. You can go the rest of this day or the rest of your life blaming your MFTPSE, or you can say, I'm going to take control of my consumption. Because if I start consuming something new, knowing that it's going to prompt my new reality of what I assume, you just figured out how to turn this ship around. Those learned concepts are running on autopilot and in charge of your whole entire life. They say that what you see is what you get. You know what? I agree. However, is what you get what actually is, or just a manifestation of what you see? Does something that you see exist without you seeing it? So another complete snap, aha, awakening, thunderbolt moment in my life. It was all becoming clear as I started to come up with these concepts that I'm sharing with you. I began reviewing clips of everything, every event in my life through this new set of lenses, and you can start doing that too. That's why you have to be open and curious. As if I was in a library using that good old news searching system that we used to use called microfiche. I just dated myself. For those that don't have any idea what that was, there was a time where we would just like look through newspaper clippings through this like super fast scrolling thing. So I started feeling like I was going through my brain and all of the events and happenings in my life like that. I had been justifying my reality and potential based on something that I had bought into. Now I'm progressively waking up, and that's what I hope this podcast does for you. Progressively waking up and disputing everything, and I'm teaching my children to do things as well. all bets are off, and that means that I might be wrong about a lot of other stuff too, and I'm open to it. Disclaimer, it's important to acknowledge as we close this episode that I was seeking growth with urgency at the time that I came up with these things. If you're seeking right now, you'll understand what I mean. If you're just consuming this podcast because you like this topic, but you're not open and curious and ready, that's fine. It's perfectly fine to just make this another lesson that you think is cool and interpret it into your own reality any way you want. But I just want you to understand when I came up with this stuff, I was going through a phase of my life where I was no longer satisfied. And I want you to know that we all want the same things in life. We all want to be happier, healthier, and wealthier. So I refer to that as being a seeker of the earth. I believe we all are seekers of the earth. Only those that seek with urgency, and I told you how that unfolded for me, will follow through and do the work. So if you're learning this stuff that I'm talking about as we move forward into further episodes and not moving into action, it's totally okay. Your time is going to come with that urgency. That's why Martin Luther King always talked about the fierce urgency of now. There always comes a time where you just go because you have to go. So your time will come when you'll build that urgency around this idea of seeking. See, a lot of people that are seeking for more right now are not ready to have it. They're just seeking. And sometimes that creates the illusion that you're working towards it. You might think that this is a proactive approach listening to this podcast right now. I was frustrated with my lack of certainty, confidence, and progress at the time that I started opening up to this stuff. So I wanted more and I began to engage in personal growth and specific interest in neuroscience and I did all the work, human brain and consciousness. I really dove deep into that stuff because of where I was at. And I became open and curious about those observations, even while in full survival mode. So this is a lifelong journey, my friends, and you're welcome to join me. Are you ready to leave your concept cave? Here's the good news, folks. This program mind of yours that we just talked about, demon included, it's completely reprogrammable. And we're going to talk about some strategies to execute on that in upcoming episodes and conversations with our guests. See, when we bring the guests in, we have guests for AI, about learning in general, challenging reality. We're going to talk to people with PTSD, people that are conspiracy theorists and all kinds of really, really cool topics. But now you guys are going to have this ability to not just absorb what they're saying, but also realize that you're going to be hearing people talk about things from their program. How fun is that? This program, mind of yours, demon included, completely reprogrammable. And when we get into these conversations, you're going to have so much fun because you're going to know something that they don't until they know it. It starts with the awareness and acknowledgement that our perceptions, thoughts, and feelings have been persuaded by an outside stimulus, which makes them very well not be of our own choice. Love and appreciate you. Have a great day.
Makes sense.